Welcome everyone to Rock M Nation Podcast. My name is Sam Snelling. I am your host. With me as always is my good friend, my co-host, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well this evening. Really stoked about the guest.
Yeah, so we have lined up for Season 3, Episode 4 of Dive Cuts. Welcome everybody. A very special guest, a guy we had on last year about this time. Guy does a great job writing for The Athletic, CJ Moore. So we're not going to spend any more time talking. We're just going to hop right into the interview. All right, everyone. I'd like to welcome in a, we'll go ahead and call him a good friend of the pod. This is his second appearance on the Dive Cuts podcast for Rock'em Nation podcast. You know him as CJ Moore. He is at CJ Moore Hoops on the Twitter sphere, a kind of a regional and national writer for The Athletic, college basketball. One of Matt and I's favorite writers. CJ, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Gentlemen, I appreciate the nice words and thanks for having me. I'm doing all right.
Well, we always like having you, if for no other reason, CJ, then you are, like Matt and I, a little bullish on our Missouri Tigers this year. And so we kind of wanted to get into that specifically today. So recording this Tuesday, October 15th, the SEC media poll came out. Missouri was ranked 13th. Yeah, I guess we could bring up the CBS ranking as well. That was a little bit more easy to kind of put to the side than the SEC media, who very, very much so do not have a lot of faith in our in the Missouri Tigers. So there are some questions that Missouri needs to answer. They're looking to replace the production of Jordan Geist, who did a lot for Mizzou last year. And I think one of the big questions in the first kind of place I want to hop into is about Drew Smith. Drew Smith's impact on this team, is he going to give Missouri fans sort of a lot of what Jordan Geist provided, or is his role going to be a little bit different?
I think some similar in terms of like the toughness and tangibles defensively. I think he should be better and defensively, but you know, he has some of that. Like, Geist was just like a tough dude that you could trust, was going to come and play hard every night and do the little things for you. And I think that's Drew Smith brings some of that too. But I think Drew Smith's just a better ball handler, a better passer, just kind of a better all around player. And that's not to poo poo on Jordan Geist, because like, he was really valuable for the Tigers last year. And I think he got every bit, you know, everything out of his ability. And, you know, they'd probably love to still have him and put him next to Drew Smith. But I think, you know, you upgrade there a little bit at point guard when you bring in Drew Smith, who I know, like, you know, I know you guys have gone back and watched some of his tape at Evansville, and I have as well, and was very impressed with what I saw. And when you study the advanced numbers as well, like, he's probably a guy that is a lot better than people realize. And because he played at Evansville, but you know, the Missouri Valley is usually a pretty good league. And I think he's a really, really nice addition to Missouri. And he also solves some issues that the Tigers have had the last couple of years. And one, you know, the major one, I think, is taking care of the basketball. And I think he's the type of point guard that's going to kind of steady things offensively and really help the Tigers get better shots and get into their stuff. And that's been a little bit of an issue. And that was probably, you know, I think Jordan got better at it, but I just think Drew Smith will kind of be a steadying force.
You kind of wrote a piece a couple weeks ago looking at questions for each of the players, and I think for Drew, you kind of hit on it right now. Is he for real? Is that translational ability going to be there going from the Missouri Valley into the SEC? But, mm-hmm. you know, to me, when I look at the rest of it, there are some other questions that are pressing and kind of at the forefront. Can Jeremiah Tillman stay on the floor? Can any of the guards really, I think, emerge as a downhill kind of playmaker? I think Konzo schematically is kind of, I think, come into his own a little bit and has gotten a little bit more modern with his sets and with his stuff, but I don't think they have a guy who can go create offense, you know, if those are kind of stall out. And really, what else can they get from the combo forward spot? You know, that last year was just kind of a black hole for them, and if Tillman was off the floor, things really, really bogged down. So I was just sort of curious, you know, you've written about the state of the program, kind of have questions for each player, but what really is the linchpin for this team to find some success, if there is one, or are there multiple ones that you think that they're going to have to lean on or they're going to have to resolve?
You know, I think you hit it on, like, I think either Torrance Watson or Xavier Pinson. I think one of those guys has to, you know, really improve and be able to be, as you said, like a downhill playmaker. I think you hope that Pinson's that, and that Watson at least gets better at, like, attacking off the bounce. You know, he really struggled finishing around the basket. I wrote about that a little bit in the you know, the questions for each player. I think you need both of those guys to improve offensively, and you know, they should. Like, a lot of times players make a good leap from freshman year to sophomore year, and I think those guys showed enough last year that there should be hope that, you know, they'll turn a corner in some of those areas that maybe were weaknesses as freshmen. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, just having diverse playmakers that can do things when everything else breaks down. While I think Drew will be, like, good at creating for others and stuff like that, like, he isn't, like, an explosive, like, blow by you type guy. He's more deliberate. So yeah, I think that's maybe a key, is just, you know, finding guys that can put defenses in bad rotations.
And one of the things that I know Konzo has kind of talked about in the past is he's made a fair amount of references to how Leonard Hamilton built up Florida State in, you know, the more recent years, where they could kind of get to 10 deep. I think, you know, Florida State kind of running Missouri out of the gym at the NCAA tournament a couple of years probably had a little bit of an impact on that. But Missouri, realistically, I mean, even though some of their depth is young and still a little bit unproven, they do have a deep roster. It looks like they could get to 10 or 11 guys without really fielding a huge drop off, say, as long as one of those guys maybe isn't, you know, Jeremiah Tillman. But are you kind of at the point where you think like this is the kind of roster that Konzo needs, and he's going to be able to get to that level of and CJ, it wouldn't be a Rock'em Nation podcast if we didn't have some dog barking. So it's okay. I swear it happens. It happens like every podcast now. So it's don't feel bad at all.
The wife and my youngest will be walking in here in a minute. Then there'll be lots of, you know, running around crazily and the collar dingling. But after that, things should chill out. Yeah. So where were we going with that one? Konzo playing really deep. Florida State, Leonard.
Yeah.
You know, I don't
can
think
he, can he get to 10 or 11 guys?
I you know, he could. I always kind of giggle when a coach talks about, you know, I'm going to play 10 or 11 guys, because, like, who really plays that many players? Like, you know, like, I don't know. I think it's a great idea. I think you should stick to probably a 7-8-man rotation, because I'm all about, you know, having rhythm and you know, if you're playing so many guys, it's just tough. So yeah, theoretically they could get there, but I bet he probably settles more into like an 8-9-man rotation. And the nice thing about having depth is if somebody gets hurt, you know, you're when your 9th, 10th, 11th guy can step in there and you don't have a big fall off. I think that's a luxury. And I do think he might have the depth on this roster where you could say, hey, as long as they don't lose, you know, like Tillman, you don't want to lose him, right? And, you know, you're not going to want to lose Drew Smith, and you're probably not going to want to lose Mark Smith. But if you lose anybody else to an injury for a little while, you can probably sustain it.
To kind of piggyback off that, I think, you know, where I've sort of looked at is, you know, how Konzo's had to kind of adapt on the fly stylistically. And I think when he was hired, they talked about, you know, hey, we're going to bring in Cornell Mann. We're going to try and run this Iowa State kind of system that's going to have, I think, a little bit more early clock action. I don't think they were going to try and, you know, get out and run, but I thought there was going to be a little bit more early clock possessions. They might run some more DHOs.
But he also loves Jay Wright and Villanova, and there's not a lot of early clock action there.
And so that kind of gets into my point here, which is, but you look at kind of, I think the one thing that stuck out to me is his team's stylistically, and at least in terms of like analytic profiles, have skewed more to that Michigan Villanova kind of four out system. Having been around the program, having been able to see these guys kind of maybe go through a little bit of the summer work, where do you think this roster is right now in terms of matching what Konzo wants? I think, you know, we've all sort of hit on it. They're hoping to shore up ball handling. Looks like they're trying to get a few more you know, creative pieces, but he's got some various guards with some multiple skill sets. He's got a big you can kind of roll or put in the short corner. Mm-hmm. So has he done a good job, I think, kind of putting together the roster so far, or is there still a little bit more, you know, development that needs to happen on that end?
Yeah, I think he's done a good job. I think this roster's come together pretty well. I think it's obvious he puts a premium on shooting. Like, he wants to go out and get shooting, and he also wants to get you know, kind of those 3-4 types that are Trey Jackson and Kobe Brown types that you know, can go out and make plays on the perimeter. And I think, you know, in terms of finding like recruiting, you know, maybe he'll still go after some Jeremiah Tillman types, but I think he'd really prefer to have guys that can play on the perimeter in terms of big men, and really, you know, kind of wants to go to that Nova style where, you know, a lot of people think like space and pace, where Nova's really not like that. It's space and slow pace, right? And I think that's kind of how he wants to play. Where they, you know, they shoot a decent amount of threes and they really space the floor, and he's got, you know, multiple playmakers, even inside, you know, guys that can put it on the floor from the 4 spot, maybe even the 5 spot. Like, he's excited about maybe playing Mitchell Smith at some center this year, 'cause you know, he can really stretch the floor with his shooting. So, but in terms of building it in his vision, yeah, I think he is. And I think this is really the first year where maybe you'll be able to see that, because so much the last few years was built around, like, okay, the Porters. Like, the first year was all about Michael and just trying to get some older guys in that could play, right? Like, you just need to upgrade the talent. So you couldn't necessarily do it in your vision. You just needed to get some guys, right? And then last year was probably going to start to kind of be in his vision, but a lot was going to go through Jonte, who was probably kind of a, you know, the type of big man he wants, but like, everything for that team was going to be built around Jonte. Like, ball was going to go through him a ton. Then you lose him right before the season. And like, that's really, really, really difficult when you have such a young roster already. So I think this might be one of the, you know, the first year where you can really start to judge Konzo and kind of how he's put it together. 'Cause I do think the image he wants of, in terms of the type of guys he wants, he's been able to go get, and stylistically he should be able to do the things he wants to do. So I think we should learn quite a bit from this year. And hey, they're still pretty young, so if they can have like a nice season this year, it's something really they can build off going into next year.
And one of the spots that, and we've kind of alluded to it so far, was the combo forward spot that was a bit of a black hole last year. Obviously, you know, missing Jonte Porter and sort of his ability to be a facilitator from the 4 spot was a spot that was really missed for the offense a year ago. So who's going to kind of be in that role this year? Who do you think, and maybe even if it's somebody that we aren't quite anticipating, like, who's going to play the role of kind of facilitator from, you know, from that more kind of combo forward spot?
I don't know. I mean, the way they talk, Kobe Brown seems to be the type of guy that can play that way. I don't know that they're going to be playing through him a ton. Like, it doesn't make sense to play through, you know, him or Trey Jackson that much. Like, I think they're more complementary pieces, but you know, one of those guys is probably going to start the 4, although I wouldn't be shocked if they end up starting 4 guards and like putting Javon Pickett at the 4 and playing small a lot. I think that could definitely happen this year. I think a lot of it depends on Trey Jackson and Kobe Brown. Like, those are the two guys that I'm really anxious to see play, just because I think the way he handles the rotation, it factors a lot around how good are those two. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I think I ran the numbers last year, and offensively their 4 guard groups were fantastic. I think they were around 1.1 or 1.2 points per possession, but they would just get murdered defensively and on the glass. I mean, they just didn't have, like, I think you've made the point with, you know, Torrance Watson and Xavier Pinson athletically, you know, I think both those guys were freshmen already too. I just don't think they were physically developed enough and athletic enough at that point in time to go 1 box out or 2 rebound outside areas or do things like that. So there would be a, they really, got compromised, I think, a little bit defensively, and they are already sort of a gap in
scheme. And that's where the savior comes in, right? Drew Smith, like Konzo's told me, he thinks he can guard fours. He's really strong. When you slide him in, and I also think a Pickett's the type of guy who should be able to guard some bigger guys. The one great thing about sophomores is they start to learn how to guard. Like, you come in as a freshman, and when you're limited offensively on top, or sorry, not offensively, athletically on top of like just being a freshman and not understanding how to guard at the college level, like that's difficult. So I think they can get away a little bit better defensively this year if they go small, just based on Drew and also, you know, those young guys getting a little bit older. But I'm with you there. I do think they'll be able to get away with it a little bit more. So you could see a lot of it. But now, if Kobe Brown and Trey Jackson are awesome and they come out right away and you're like, wow, like, we're really impressed with these guys and they can really go, like, you're probably not going to go small a ton because you want to find minutes for them.
Well, yeah. So one of the things, like, I'm kind of curious to see is I think we know that Konzo Martin can coach defense. He's all through his career, he's coached good defenses. Since he's been at Missouri, Missouri's been the 43rd and the 51st ranked defenses, adjusted defense, according to Ken Pomeroy. And while that's not great, I mean, it's kind of like we were just saying about the freshmen kind of getting a little better, a little stronger. Suddenly they become a little bit better defenders. I also thought, like, losing Mark Smith, who was, in my opinion, probably the team's best defender a year ago, for a third of the season, probably hurt their numbers quite a bit. And so now you're relying on guys like, you know, Torrance Watson and Xavier Pinson, who maybe weren't quite as adept on the defensive side of the floor. So isn't it like one of those things, like, I think we can kind of count on Missouri being a good defensive team. It's just a matter of how good they're willing to be offensively that's going to kind of set this team apart and sort of push them up the scale of SEC teams. And maybe that's being undervalued.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think 25-ish defense is, like, reasonable to hope for Missouri. Offensively, they should be much better. And, a lot of it will just depend on kind of the jumps a lot of those dudes make and how good Drew Smith is and how much maybe Drew Smith helps a Jeremiah Tillman, which that's also a hope of the Tigers, that, like, he's going to get the ball to Tillman in spots where he can be successful, and maybe he gets less fouls because he's not waiting on it so long and ends up getting offensive fouls because he's trying to post up for like 10 seconds. Those are the things that Missouri's hoping on. And when you're looking at the glass half full, I think a lot of that can be is reasonable to expect to be better.
And to follow up on that, I mean, I'm working on a piece about this right now, and I really think what people tend to really undervalue because of Tillman's foul issues and kind of usage and minutes is he's arguably one of the better post passers, I think, coming back in the SEC. I think, you know, early on he struggled with hard double teams, but you look over the last half of the season, if you really dig into synergy numbers, he's arguably one of the top five post passers in the country last year. And so I always think that's been an underrated aspect to his game that sort of eases that pressure on Drew a little bit to be that kind of facilitator. If you have a guy who, if we run an initial action, a counter action doesn't get it, well, let's reverse it, dump it inside and run split cuts off the backside and let Jeremiah just read. Is that something that you think people maybe undervalue in Jeremiah? Is just he has become quietly a really good facilitator.
Maybe and quietly. I'm not,
dimension does that add?
Yeah, maybe quietly. I might pump the brakes on top five a little bit just because, man, he struggled so bad with those double teams. And, like, that's what sticks out in my mind. But I know, looking at some of the advanced numbers that, like, they shot the ball from three a lot better when he was on the floor. And that comes down to, you know, some of his passing, the attention that he drew. And, that they could just get some wide open shots just based on him throwing it out. And I do think he did. You're right that he did improve on that. And if that can be something he continues to improve, like, you know, they've got the shooters to make teams pay when they double. So I think that's probably the thing that could be really promising for the Tigers. Like, okay, if you're going to double him, he's finally can handle that. And we've got guys that can knock it down. And hey, if you don't double him, like he's a problem one-on-one in the post. So, you know, it's conceivable that Missouri's, I mean, like last year, what was it? 127 in adjusted offensive efficiency. Like that number should go way up. And I'd be surprised if they're not, you know, at least like, I don't know, top 70, top 60. Which is probably not.
So I want to kind of pose this. Yeah. But so I want to kind of pose this, this next question is a little bit of a two-parter. Basically like this. We're sitting here at the end of the season and having a discussion over what happened with Missouri's season. If Missouri is going to finish in the bottom five of the league, what happens? And if they finish in the top five of the league, what happens?
Okay, if they finish in the bottom five, Jeremiah Tillman's still probably just the Jeremiah Tillman we've always seen, and he hasn't, like, he didn't make a jump, right? Those freshman fours turn out to just not quite be ready. Drew Smith isn't quite as good as Missouri and Missouri and we told him to be, right? Like I'd be partly to blame for that hype trade probably. You know, maybe an injury or two that seems like this, they've had some pretty terrible injury luck. Maybe that continues. So that's probably a conversation if bottom five. Now, if it's top five, I guess all the opposite of what I just said is true. I think Tillman makes a leap. I don't know if those freshman fours have to be great, but at least one of those guys is like solid. Playing small probably works some. And then I think they shoot it pretty well. And Drew Smith's pretty dang good point guard.
Matt, do you have anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, I was just going to do a quick recruiting related question, which I know you're not writing for Eric Bossian over at Rivals, but I'm just sort of struck by kind of what's happening in the Kansas City market right now. You know, you've got Kansas, which seems to be doing a little bit more homegrown recruiting, at least in the last two classes, especially guys like Agbaji and Christian Braun, and even kind of going over and taking, you know, DeJuan Harris out of Columbia, Rockbridge. You know, Kansas State has sort of hopscotched into Missouri over into the St. Louis side. Missouri's probably going to have to start getting into, is probably going to have to start getting into Kansas City in the next two classes. Meanwhile, you've got Fred Hoiberg and up at Nebraska, you've got Creighton up there. I mean, it seems like the market has gotten a little bit, you know, contested there more so than maybe just Big 12 schools coming in. So I'm sort of curious, what does it look like for Missouri to start trying to gain some traction there? I mean, or is it a pretty crowded house right now? I'm just sort of curious for your thoughts as to how Missouri breaks through on the west side of the state when a lot of their attention so far has been on the St. Louis metro.
Yeah, I mean, I'd expect that they continue to really hit St. Louis hard. I think what will probably get some attention, you know, what will help them recruit Kansas City better, or at least get in the race with some of those guys, is to just have some results, right? Mm-hmm. Like have a good season. Winning usually attracts guys. I think you're seeing that with Kansas State right now. Like, yeah. Kansas State's having one of their, you know, putting together a pretty darn good recruiting class for their standard, and, you know, having gone and just won the Big 12 probably helps. But yeah, I mean, if there's ever a time to like come in and recruit Kansas City when KU usually gets like the pick of what it wants, I think it's going to be really, really hard for KU to recruit, at least in this next year or two, until they know their fate. So this is probably the time to kind of come on and look in Kansas City. But you are right. Like, I think Self's maybe taking guys that he wouldn't take in the past. Although, you know, I do think he would have probably taken an Ochai, and a Christian Brown. But, you know, they just took a JUCO kid that's from Kansas City.
Yeah, I saw that today.
That, started eight games last year. which, like, you know, he was recruited by a bunch of high majors and seems to have like a lot of potential. It's just to see Kansas take a guy like that this early is really, really unusual. And I think it's, you know, obviously it's about what's going on there. So, but yeah, if there was ever a time to come in and recruit Kansas City, this is probably it. But I think what gets attention always is just having, you know, a winning team. And the other thing I think big for Missouri in recruiting, especially locally, cause like locally you can bring in kids on unofficial visits a lot, right? Like you can get them to come to your games. Like I think Missouri's got to start getting better fan support at some of their games. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but like the atmosphere there is not what I remember at, you know, growing up around this area. I just think I was a little surprised that the fan support wasn't a little bit better last year, considering, you know, in year one, he kind of took them to an NCAA tournament when once they lost Michael Porter, I don't think, you know, many people expected that. So it was, you know, a very promising year one. And I know last year was kind of a down year, but I'm interested to see what the fan support's like this year, especially if they get off to a good start. I know that home non-conference schedule is not
less than ideal.
Whole lot of quad four games.
Yeah. It's not pretty, but so anyway, those are my thoughts on that. But you're right. I don't write for Bossy, and I try to stay the heck away from recruiting sometimes. It makes my head hurt.
Well, you do have a point about like the, you know, the attendance, and you know it will be interesting because kind of going into the season, I think local expectations are, you know, far higher, you know, than where they are nationally. But I do sort of wonder if the national narrative of just sort of seeing Missouri consistently at the bottom of these rankings will have a little bit of a toll on the more casual fan, you know, who maybe doesn't tune in, you know, until it gets closer to, you know, the regular season. They're like, oh, well, Missouri's not supposed to be very good according to, you know, such and such. So I'm going to, you know, wait to figure out if they're going to be good or not. And maybe they wait, but I think like, yeah, I really think that the fans should show up because this is a program. I think Konzo is building it the right way. He's getting kids that are buying in, and they seem to really have a lot kind of going for it. I don't know if that's going to lead to, you know, kind of like we were saying, a top five finish, but I think they should contend for an NCAA tournament spot. And if they make the tournament, then I won't be surprised if they land the NCAA tournament. I think I'll be a little bit more surprised if they don't.
Yeah, I think it like at the least, I think this is a team that has the goods to, you know, being like at least an NIT, and I'm with you. I think they can play for a tournament bid. So I think if we get to the end of the year and Missouri's not in at least the NIT, then yeah, I say that's a probably disappointing year, just because I think I know their expectations are pretty high.
Yeah. Well, everybody go log into Twitter. Search at CJ Moore Hoops and give him a follow. Like I said, we always like national guys that like Missouri, and CJ does some really, really good write ups on Missouri. What's on the docket next for you, CJ?
I leave tomorrow morning and fly to Houston, and tomorrow I'll be at Houston to talk to former Kansas guard Quentin Grimes.
Nice.
And then I'm driving up to Stephen F. Austin. And they have an assistant coach there. His name is Wade Mason. And he has liver cancer.
Oh.
And is like coaching during the week and getting chemo on the weekends. So that's kind of a downer. That's one of the next things I'll work on. But in terms of the Tigers, I'm not sure when it's coming out. But I do have a story on Reed Nico that has been written and maybe edited and it'll probably appear on the website at some point. I haven't been told when, but they've got it. So it was fun. I ended up going doing a nature walk with Reed, just to kind of give you a little preview there.
Nice.
So.
Big soda. He's a good kid.
Yeah, he's a really, really good kid. I really enjoyed him. So it was a fun one.
Well, CJ, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. We always love having you on and talking to you about basketball. We will send all the followers your way. You'll probably get all our listeners, which I'm pretty sure we have a solid 3 listeners at this point.
So, hey, no. I mean, your moms, maybe an uncle or two. Like,
well, if I include family members, I think we're up to 5. but
come on. That's not true. All right.
But thanks again for tuning in, and we appreciate your coming on.
Appreciate it, fellas. Take care.
And once again, I want to say thanks to CJ Moore. You can follow him on Twitter. Go read his stuff at theathletic.com. Matt and I are both subscribers. Well, I think actually I'm a subscriber, and Matt leeches off my subscription, but that's okay. All of the words that CJ writes are worthwhile. And worth reading. So definitely make time when you see his stuff pop up. Any follow-up thoughts on what CJ had to say, Matt?
No, I think he's of like mind with us, which is, I think, you know, as we said multiple times, we're all bullish, I think, on Missouri's prospects here. And, you know, I think the one thing, we're going to get into this in a minute, you know, when we talk about other polls and other kind of preseason projections, you know, we understand variance. You know, I think, you know, we're going to talk about people that have picked Missouri 10th, 11th, or 12th. And, you know, those aren't outlandish. You know, I disagree with them, you know, but I don't know what those folks have done, you know, in terms of their prep work and their background work. But I think, you know, fans are going to see where we pick Missouri or where CJ picks Missouri, and they're going to see other outlets and be like, well, why can there be such a wide gap? And I think we can talk about this too. It's just the middle of the SEC is so muddled and so congested that 1 to 2 outcomes can really swing you 3 to 4 spots in the standings. And so when you see teams, as always, it's probably best to think of them in tiers. So I think that's sort of my takeaway is, you know, people are going to hear us and we're all going to sound bullish on Missouri. I don't think we're operating too far outside of bounds of where other people are. We just may be more optimistic in terms of what we think the outcomes are going to be. So that's sort of my takeaway. It's just in preseason, I think a lot of people get locked in and fixated on numbers rather than kind of, I think, looking at, you know, the bigger picture and kind of the macro picture of the league itself.
Yeah. And I think the likelihood that, that you would expect national writers to dive into the rosters the way that we do. I mean, we get really granular. I watch video on every newcomer that's coming into the league, so I have a fair idea of kind of what rotations will look like and what you can expect from any given recruiting class. It's a lot of work, and I completely understand if. You know, like Matt Norlander isn't breaking down Texas A&M to that degree. You know, but it is sort of interesting to where, like, so we talked about a little bit with CJ, the polls that came out, the media poll had Missouri 13th for SEC media poll, and basically the same thing came out for the CBS Sports poll. And I am open and taking any and all bets for people that think Missouri is going to finish 13th, I will take that bet that Missouri will finish higher, because you and I both think, like, I think any outcome between like 5 and 12 is possible depending on the breaks. You know, if one team has one of their guys go down and it's an important guy, like say Mark Smith, you know, Mark Smith was missing for a third of the season last year, and that hurt Missouri's offensive efficiency because he was a guy who had a really good effective field goal percentage because of his ability to shoot threes. And so when you miss that, I think it's easy to kind of overlook, you know, what you have coming back and maybe not think that, oh, if they have healthy Mark Smith or if they just don't have Mark Smith. It's one of those things that's kind of easy to miss. So I think the fluidity of 5 to 12 for me, I think you look at Florida and Kentucky at the top, you look at Texas A&M and Vanderbilt probably at the bottom. Vanderbilt to me is a very clear 14 I think Texas A&M has enough there that they could maybe slip up a couple spots with kind of a, you know, the right break. I'm just kind of skeptical if you get a guy like TJ Starks to kind of buy into what Buzz Williams wants to do, because Buzz is kind of cut from a different cloth. But we'll see. Like, we'll see kind of how it plays out. I tend to think that most of the people who are discounting Missouri at this point are kind of discounting how good of a basketball coach Konza Martin is. And I don't necessarily think Konza Martin has proven to us that he's an elite basketball coach, but I think he's a very good basketball coach. And I think he's somebody who can get Missouri into a place with a top 40 defense and a top 70 offense. And that's good enough for like sixth or seventh in the league. And I don't think that's asking a whole lot for what this program has.
No, and you know, you and I talked about in the offseason, you know, Mark Smith, not having him arguably cost them probably 3 wins in the standings. So that's 8-10 right there. And so again, you know, if Missouri was an 8-10 team, you know, bringing back Mark Smith, bringing back Jeremiah Tillman, you know, having some pieces back around them, you know, I don't think you'd see experts nationally picking Missouri 12th. I don't think you'd see them picking Missouri 5th, but I think you'd see Missouri in preseason polls closer to 7th or 8th. And so realistically, I think that that's kind of the thing in the context that's been missing here is Mark Smith, probably his absence cost them a shot at an NIT bid. And if Missouri's an NIT team bringing some pieces back and they've got a newcomer in Drew Smith and they've got a couple, you know, they've got a top 80 freshman and they've got another kind of intriguing prospect in Kobe Brown, you know, folks might say, okay, maybe they can get on the bubble this year. But I think, you know, so much of what happens is, you know, just because national writers, like we've said, have a lot to cover. They have to cover 353 teams in theory. They're not going to dive in and really, I think, look at that nuance and really understand what, you know, this roster really looks like. And, you know, as we talked about with CJ, there are real questions, though, that I think you can't dismiss out of hand. You know, is Drew Smith going to be as good as advertised? You know, will the freshman guards, particularly Pinson and Watson, be better finishers off the dribble? Will the freshman combo forwards give them something? Can Tillman stay on the floor? You know, does the offense look the way Konza wants it to? Those aren't questions with readily easy answers. But I think when you look at what Missouri has, there's reason to feel confident that they can, you know, solve a lot of those problems or resolve a lot of those in their favor. So it's, to me, it, you know, if it's picking them 5th or 7th or 10th, I'm fine with all of those because we don't know how the games are going to go. We can't predict injury luck, but picking a team 13th or 14th pretty much says this roster is a gut job and it's going to be a multi-year rebuild. And I just don't think the roster's in that position at all. I don't think you can reasonably think that at all based on any, you know, respectable level of research.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing is a lot of people don't realize that one of the things that you and I do is, and I kind of make you do it, but we pick them game by game. So we have to go through and pick winners of every game. And I think that really alters the outlook of where you think teams are going to land. I think it's valuable, particularly valuable when you're looking at an unbalanced schedule like the SEC. When everybody plays everybody, it's okay, who's the best team, who's the worst team, we'll figure it out in the middle. But with an unbalanced schedule, I mean, like, okay, you're playing Kentucky home and home. Or if you're not playing Kentucky, are you playing them at Rupp? And if you're playing them at Rupp, then you're probably feeling pretty good because that's a loss that you can kind of mark in your column and be like, all right, we probably aren't going to win a whole lot of road games anyway. So I'm not worried about that. But if you get them at home, now you're talking about taking away the potential for you know, a home win. And so if you're kind of one of these teams in the middle, losing or beating Kentucky or losing or beating Florida where you get them home and away is really important in the grand scheme of things, because those teams aren't going to lose a lot of games. And so if Ole Miss drops home games against, you know, three good teams, all of a sudden they're looking at best 5-3 at home, and now they have to go play another 9 games on the road. So it's just one of those things that when you have the unbalanced schedule, I think it plays such a role in defining who is and who isn't good in any given season, or whose record is what it is in any given season. I think it's an important thing to play.
And I think you and I have zeroed in on a team like Auburn, which we've seen them come in 3-4 in polls, which to me, one, ignores the fact that they're like 13th in returning production in the conference. Like they've literally lost 65% of their production in almost every major statistical category. They've lost their top three players who, if you believe in KenPom's MVP, were critical for them. Absolutely critical. It was Chuma Okeke, Bryce Brown, or Jared Harper that was an MVP of almost every game for them. Their bench got rolling down the stretch last year, but they were 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. But if you really dig in, it was their top 4 guys in that rotation that carried them. And now you're expecting reserve units to sort of step in. And I think I wrote this spring, Auburn's 12th in returning possessions. You're expecting reserve units to step up and backfill that kind of production. That's a heavy ask anyway. And then you've got to go on the road to Mississippi State. You have to go on the road to Gainesville. You have to go, you know, to a tough road trip like Arkansas. You got to go to Alabama. You got to go to a better Georgia. You know, you have to go to Kentucky. And you have to go to Knoxville to play Tennessee. That's not a really great road schedule for you. And that really puts a lot of pressure on you to hold up at home, but you're getting home and home games against a better Alabama. You're getting a home and home against Kentucky and a home and home against, I believe, yeah, that they have a home and home against Georgia. That's a heavy, heavy schedule, especially when you're having to replace as many parts. And I know they have Isaac Okoro, who's a top 50 freshman coming in, but when you really go through the schedule and you look what Auburn has to replace, and you know what's going to be put on the shoulders of guys like Samir Dowdy or Javon McCormick or even Austin Wiley having to really reassert himself, do you feel good about picking that team fourth? Even if Bruce Pearl's a good coach. I don't think they're going to be a bad team. I don't think they're going to... I think they're a potential NCAA tournament team. But I think they're a lot closer to 9-9 or 10-8 than they are to 12-6 or 13-5, which is where usually that team's going to be if you're in third or fourth in the standing. So I think when you go through and you look at the numbers against the schedule and you watch the film on these guys, you really get a sense for what maybe is a better hypothetical than just doing a cursory skim of a stat sheet and going, well, they made a Final Four run last year and they're bringing some guys back. So I really think that's... there's a spectrum that you work on. And so I always try and keep that in mind whenever I'm looking at projections. You know, what did this person do? And, you know, to me, the hallmark is if you're just automatically putting Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Auburn in 3, 4, 5, that actually makes me less convinced that you've done the homework, because there's some real questions with those rosters at this point. That's not to say they're going to be bad, but I don't know if they'll be top 6 in that order. So I think you have to kind of do case studies, and I think it's sort of a good sort of example of how the methodology you use can really, really be important in sort of framing, you know, what the league race might look like.
Yeah, and as I said on Auburn today, like you and I were kind of talking privately, I'm like, they finished 5th in the SEC. Like, I realized they made the Final Four, but they finished 5th in the SEC. They were 11-7. The only reason they were a 5 seed as high as they were is because they were streaking at the end of the year, and they were streaking because of 3 dudes. Like, they were playing great basketball at the end of the year because Jared Harper is awesome, Bryce Brown is awesome, and Chuma Okeke is awesome. And all those 3 guys are gone. So I like, if you told me that Auburn finished like 6-12 this year, I'd be like, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I still think they're probably going to be more like 9-9 or 10-8, but that's a lot. That's a lot to replace. And it is one of those things, like, we always like to look at these recruiting classes as though every recruiting, if you have a good recruiting class, it's going to perform like Kentucky, but that's not how it works. Missouri can attest to that by, you know, rolling out that elite recruiting class a couple of years ago and basically having Jeremiah Tillman and Jonte Porter be good bigs. But the bulk of the offense went through Cassius Robertson and Jordan Barnett, guys that were experienced and kind of knew how to play college basketball.
And I wrote about this summer that realistically an instant impact recruit is a kid who's a top 35 recruit. That's an instant impact recruit. Maybe let's expand that to top 50. Once you get between 50 and 150, it can be pretty circumstantial. Like, it can be hit or miss. And, you know, the one thing people will look at Auburn and say, well, they got Isaac Okoro. The other three members of that class are between 100 and 150. If you look at the average 247 composite index rating for Auburn, it and Missouri are basically equal. Basically equal. Like, if you were to look at the average player in those classes, Missouri is bringing in comparable talent, just if you believe in 247's index, to Auburn. And Missouri brings back more known production. They bring in an impact player like Drew Smith. You know, Jeremiah Tillman's a guy who is probably arguably one of the better post players in the conference. They had freshmen who are playing well down the stretch. If you were to lay those two rosters next to each other and you look at the data, you look at the recruiting classes, you watch video on all the guys, I don't think there's a huge gap between Auburn and Missouri. But to a national pundit, that might sound crazy. And so I really think that's what people have to keep in mind here, is unless Auburn's rolling out three top 50 dudes, and that's what Bruce Pearl's bringing in, there's going to probably be some growing pains there. And, you know, it's probably not fair to Bruce to sort of say, well, you went to a Final Four last year, can't be too big of a drop-off. It just ignores the fact that losing Jared Harper to a second, you know, who I don't even believe Jared Harper went, you know, above 50th in the draft. Like, losing him to go play professional basketball is just blows a huge hole in their roster. And now everyone's assuming, like, okay, Javon McCormick's a pretty good player. He was good in spot minutes. Step in there and replace arguably the best point guard in the conference. And don't miss a beat. It doesn't really, I think, hold up to scrutiny when you really dig into it. But, you know, the media gets their vote, and, you know, we have ours, and, you know, difference of opinion are natural. So we'll see what happens.
Well, my bet, my willingness to bet anyone on Missouri being 13th is still out there. If you want to take Missouri at 13th, I will bet against that. But. So we had a little bit of recruiting news, and we want to kind of hop on this before we get at it. Last week on the podcast, I was with Brandon Kiley, and I said that we think Missouri is basically done for the fall period.
That was true.
True at the time. Now it's less true. It looks like Missouri is going to get involved with this Jalen Terry kid. You have thoughts on that?
Really, really good prospect out of Michigan. Depending on who you believe, it's Isaiah Jackson's clearly the number one prospect in the state of Michigan. Plays for the family, played with Jalen Terry, pick and roll partners, and when they're really going, they're a devastating pick and roll combination. Then another name you've probably heard us talk about before, Carlos Scooby Johnson, is probably second in Michigan. He committed to Butler. And a really nice pickup for them, and a really nice class Laval Jordan's putting together. And then some will have Jalen Terry in there. And Terry is 5'11", 155. If you see him, lean is the term that comes to mind. But really athletic, can get off the floor. I'd say his bounce is in the same kind of range as Mario McKinney. He can get off the floor, and both are end-to-end. They're quick. They play great downhill. Jumper needs some refining, but you look at it and it's mechanically pretty good. Just needs some reps, but realistically,
just needs to go in more.
But top 60 prospect nationally, had been committed to Michigan State since April. Michigan State took A.J. Hoggard, another point guard out of Huntington Prep, last week. That spurred Jalen Terry to look elsewhere. Michigan State's really loaded at his position. They already had two other point guards on the roster when they took him, and then Hoggard would make four. They're both kind of ball dominant guards. Rocket Watts, who is on the roster, who Missouri fans should know about, is also a ball dominant guard. So the question is, who's going to get touches? Who's going to get minutes? That led Jalen to sort of look elsewhere. The big news for Missouri fans and why you should care is everyone else has basically filled up their point guard spots. Butler has taken two point guards. They were a finalist. Iowa State has taken a point guard. Iowa has taken a point guard. Obviously, Michigan State has. Missouri has point guards on the roster, but it was willing to, you know, just wedge in Caleb Love, another top 50 kid who is a scoring first point guard onto the roster. So Missouri right now, I think, could be in position to, if it really wants to make a push, you know, try and reopen the door there and get a kid who I think, you know, Caleb was rated higher and has improved as a passer, but Jalen Terry is not a huge, I'm not even going to call it a step down. They're in the same ballpark. If you can get in with a kid this late in the process, you do it. So we'll see if Missouri makes a push there. I'd heard from some people in Michigan that, you know, they wouldn't be surprised if Missouri wanted to jump in there, and that this is a kid you make room for. So I haven't heard anything definitive on whether or not Missouri's reached out or whether or not they've tried to, you know, set up an official visit or anything. But, you know, it's definitely a situation that people should keep an eye on because it's a kid that has connections to Missouri. And you can talk about those if you want, but they were a finalist. They've recruited him. They have some connections on the staff up there, and they have a need. And a willingness to take him on.
Well, yeah. So he goes to Flint Bleacher High School there in Flint, Michigan, and it's the same school that Monty Morris went to. For those who remember Monty Morris, played at Iowa State, now plays for the Denver Nuggets. He was recruited to Iowa State by one Cornell man. So. I'd say that Missouri's staff has some familiarity with the area, that school in particular. And whenever you're talking about Michigan, so Michigan kids, it usually kind of comes down to this. Is Michigan or Michigan State involved? If they are not, we know that Michigan State is now not involved. Rumors seem to be that Michigan is not looking to get involved. If that's the case, then you have to really like Missouri's chances. It's not to say that they would land him if they just threw their hat in the ring, but but Konza Martin is a guy that, you know, seems to carry some weight, and everybody knows Cornell Mann in Michigan. So I would say at this point that if Missouri wants to get involved, that I would not be remotely surprised if they ended up landing him. And I think if you're talking about like how you can put together the kind of, you know, roster that you think can take the next step at Missouri, then it starts with kids like this, really, who are high level kids who you can get to kind of stick around. And I think that's when you talk about Jeremiah Tillman's impact on this program has been pretty long because he's been able to stick around, even though he's not always been on the floor, but I think that this is where like you kind of get into the, you know, the one and dones might make life a little harder on schools like North Carolina and Kentucky, and the fact that they have to kind of do this year after year after year. But if you can get kind of that kid that's in that 50 to 60 range and get them to sort of be on campus 2, 3, maybe 4 years, you're going to get a lot of mileage out of that player.
Yeah, and the other thing, another Cornell Mann note, Jalen Terry played with Malik Carr, who is Cornell's son, on the family out of Detroit. So, you know, the degrees of separation are hair thin here. If you know, Missouri wants to assert itself, it probably can. I'd heard from somebody that, you know, Butler's staff was handicapping it as Iowa State or Missouri as the ultimate destination. Now, that doesn't mean that it's true, but, you know, I always think it's interesting when other staffs sort of handicap who they think has a shot. And if they're saying, you know, hey, we've recruited this kid pretty hard too, these are our two contenders, that sort of makes me perk up as well. So it'll be worth monitoring moving forward. But if Missouri can get in and get involved and get a top 60 kid, you know, you hate to frame it in these terms, but Missouri fans would have been happy if it would have been Caleb Love, a scoring kind of point, and a big man like Davion Bradford. If your class is, you know, Jalen Terry, scoring point guard, top 50 prospect, and Jordan Wilmore, a big who's a developmental prospect and kind of a developmental multi-year guy like Davion Bradford, you've achieved the objective. You've ticked off your needs. And, you know, was it, you know, the most straightforward way to get there? No, it wasn't. But if that is what comes to pass, then, you know, Konzo, I think, is, again, done what he needs to do on the recruiting trail, gotten guys in here that fit what he wants, fit what he needs. And, you know, that's just another reason to, once again, doubt what CBS Sports wrote about it being a do-or-die year for him.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. Well, we are kind of running up against it. We have held your attention for quite a while. So Matt and I are going to get out of here. Go give him a follow on Twitter if you're not already. If you aren't already following him on Twitter, like, what are we waiting on here, people? Matt J. Harris, 85. You can follow me at Sam T. Snelling. Subscribe to the podcast, please. Make sure you rate it if you have some time. Go listen to Nate and go listen to Mitch. They are doing good job, even though I gave Mitch a little trouble last week. Good job, everybody. We're podcasting Rock'em Nation. Huzzah! So until next week, we'll be back with more podcasts. So see you then.